Now, when it comes to significant others really are kind of in their own class. They're not the same as, you know, fathers, brothers, sons, or mothers, sisters, daughters. They're in their own separate class because they really know all of your junk. They know everything you have or haven't done. And they're not just in some situations like a spouse. They can be above you, they can be beside you, and they can be below you. So all of these different things in a spouse or a significant other are different. The whole situation is just different with them. One, because they know you in a way that nobody else knows you. And so be aware when dealing with relationships on a more intimate scale, such as significant others, that, again, it's on a whole separate scale, because you're not going to go tell your wife what she should be doing necessarily. Now, depending on the role, if she acknowledges that you're better in that particular role than someone else, she will say, okay, well, babe, what decision should I do? And so then it's a back and forth rapport versus, and it should be a back and forth rapport and based off of each other's strengths. And so you want to make sure that you're not being a taker to your significant other as well. Because when you're a taker with your significant other, then what tends to happen is that you have an expectation for them to do things for you, but, and it's not based off of a give and take relationship, it's based off of a you owe me relationship. And, you know, some people say in relationship that it's 50-50, but it's not actually 50-50, it's 100-100 without the expectation that they owe you something. So in other words, and this is actually where a lot of spouses actually get really tired with each other, is they give to a spouse with an expectation of an exchange. And so they say, well, I did that for you, you should do XYZ for me. No, it's not based off of that. Because the second it's based off of that, you're not being a real giver. And also, on the other side of that is, when they receive it from you, it's not an expectation, well, I still owe you something. And so it's that back and forth. And whenever that's confused, especially in that side of it, then there can cause a bunch of problems. But again, the spouse or significant other really need to be aware that they fall in a whole separate class, and that at any given point in time, what relationship are you with them at that moment? So at one point, you know, she can be above you because, well, she's okay. For example, my wife is excellent at literature. She is a linguistic thought, which that's a book from Carolyn Leaf about the seven pillars of thought. And so my wife's very linguistic. Well, I'm not. So whenever I write something, I give it to my wife. And she breaks out a red pen. And then she starts scribbling on it, and it always looks like it's bleeding to death. My paper looks like it's just bleeding to death. And so, and I get frustrated because I'm not linguistic. I'm analytical. And the analytical or mathematical mind is great when it comes to calculations. But I struggle with the English language because there's too many variables. And so, one scenario, the way you say it based off of tone is incorrect, yet it's the same sentence. See, that makes no sense to an analytical or mathematical mind. But to her mind, it makes perfect sense. And so, like another one is license plates. We're going down the road. She can see four letters, and she can tell you this fantastic meaning of what it looks like. And I look at it, and I go, well, it's four letters. And she said, oh, yeah, but that means that. I'm like, oh. Okay, I would have never thought that she is Bumblebee, you know, or whatever the back is on a car. Why? Because that's how her brain works. So whenever I get into a situation, when it comes to literature and those kind of things, I treat her as if she's my head, automatically. And that's difficult because in a husband-wife relationship, the husband's supposed to be the head of the house. And so when he is the head of the house, it's not in a controlling demeanor, but in a protective demeanor. And so when he has that protection over the house. Well, he wants to protect, but that's also where he comes under and says, babe, you're a lot better at that than me. And really, the best thing is for you to help me, not me try to tell you how it's supposed to be done. And so what I'll do is I'll give it to her. And she's like, and one day she told me, she said, well, if you keep getting so mad about it, why do you keep giving it to me? And I says, because you're so much better at it. And so what amazes me is I feel like I'm never getting any better at it. And she says I am, but I don't see it because my paper still looks like it's bleeding. Now, in another aspect, I could be a stronger personality than her, say in finances or something like that. So then again, she will come under me. And so it's that back and forth. But see, this does not work with anybody consistently except your spouse. Okay? So spouses really fall into a whole separate category than other people do. And so you need to really be aware of that, because when it's a father, almost always they're going to stay in that one position. When they're a brother, they almost always stay in that one position. When they're a son, they almost always stay in that one position. But with a spouse, it is constantly switching between all the positions on a consistent basis. And so, really, again, to reiterate a simple point, but disclosure is everything on the front end. Okay? I'm better at this than you, correct? So then they acknowledge. Okay, well then please let me make the decision on this. And so that's that, again, that back and forth acknowledgement to realize what is actually going on. And so when we do that, and when we do it consistently, this is why they say that spouses or married couples typically earn 20% more, they live, I think it was 10 to 20 years longer, that they have less stress, they have less financial problems, emotional problems, physical problems, and this is one of the reasons why, is because if done properly, then you're relying off of each other's strengths on a consistent basis, and there's a balance. It's a check against your weighted analysis, to bring it back to the appraisal term. So they'll come back and say, you said family was first, but you hadn't spent any time with us in 3 years. So is it really first? So they come back, and that's one of the things about a spouse, is the balance side of it. The question is if you don't understand how the relationship is working, then you'll misinterpret your wife's communication. And one of the books we've recently been reading is Love and Respect by Dr. Emerson. And it says that men look through everything with blue sunglasses, blue hearing aids, and a blue microphone. And women see everything through pink sunglasses, pink hearing aids, and say everything through a pink microphone. And so when they say things, when it comes out, it's an emotional response, and that's not to be stereotypical, but as a general rule, it comes from an emotional side because of women's general emotions. And so, but when men hear it, they don't hear it from an emotional standpoint, and so we interpret the exact same thing completely different. And so this is where that communication and that disclosure on the front end becomes more and more prominent. And so, again, there's a lot of different techniques and those things to that. So, to really kind of jump into the next subject, we're going to talk about the types of people in your life. And there's four basic types. And it's a confidant, a constituent, a comrade, and a companion. Now, some of this information I actually originally heard from T.D. Jakes. And so I'll give him credit for the original of me hearing it. I've kind of made some of it my own, if not a good portion of it. But a confidant, the definition, is one to whom secrets or private matters are disclosed. So a confidant is someone that is for you. And this is where best friends are really found, is in specifically the confidant section. So, and one of the rules, one of the stories I like to use is I have went to some restaurant management coursework, and the legal supervisor was giving us some pointers on some major issues within the restaurant field. And he said, and he walks up to the board and he writes 97-3 on the board. And then he asks the whole class, he says, how many of you know what these numbers mean? And of course, we had not never been to necessarily his legal class on top of it. And then how many different variations could you say that these numbers have a meaning? And so he looks, and of course, nobody dared say a word. So we just looked at him funny for about 2 minutes. And he says, 90% of anything that you will say as a manager in a restaurant, nobody cares. He says, nobody cares either way. He says, they don't care what you had for breakfast. They don't care how your kids are doing, good or bad. They just don't really care. And so to tell all your business and your problems or even some of your successes, really, they don't care either way. He said, now the other 3% that you would disclose your information to, he said, are close friends and family. He said, and they really usually know anyway because they're close friends or family. He said, so you don't really have to tell them because they're close friends and family. They have such a close bond with you that they already know this. He said, the other 7% of people actually when you tell them something negative, are actually happy to hear that it happened to you. So when you understand that, this is actually these four types of people in process, this particular analogy. Number one, the confidant is that 3%. They're generally close to you. They have a direct relationship with you. They know you. They are really for you. They're for your success. They're for your benefit. They're for to help you along in your life, regardless if you can do something for them or not, or if they agree with you or not. Because they're 100% for you. They're for your success. It said, unless a friend agree, how can they walk together? And so this is, again, that confidant, well, that will stay along with you. And actually, when I said that, that is actually more the constituent. And I'll jump on that side of it. Constituent is serving as part of a whole, empowered to elect or designate, authorized to make or amend a constitution. They are only for what you are for. See, most of your friends... Again, it says, how can friends walk together unless they agree? So they are for what you are for. So the second you're not for what they are for, they're not with you anymore. So that shows that they're not a confidant anymore. See, and so what can happen is you will have a belief that they are confidants when really they're constituents, because they're only for you because you're for what they are for. And so when you're at a company and you're working, they are for what you're for because you're for the success of the company. So they're a constituent, or some people would say an associate, or some people will say close friend, but they're not really a friend. They're just somebody you know. And so when you understand that, then you understand that when did they come along beside you? If they only came along beside you when you were doing something they liked, they're not actually for you. That doesn't mean that these people do not have value in your life. It just simply means that they are there for as long as you're on the same path. And my mom uses a particular story. She sent it to me one day, and I really liked it. I don't know who it's by. But it says, the door is always open. Again, I tell you, the door is always open. If you would like to come in, the door is open. And if you'd like to leave, again, I say, the door is always open. But if you're standing in the door, get out of the way because you're blocking the flow of traffic. So my reason for saying that is you're going to have constituents constantly coming and going because just because you were for a particular task before doesn't mean you're still for the task now, and so therefore you have a separation, and so people will say, well, and they get mad because they're confused because they thought they were a confidant, but they were really just a constituent. Now the next one is comrades. Comrades are persons who shares one's interests or activities. But even more so, they are not for what you are for, they are for what you're against. So this is especially important, say for example, we have comrades in battle. Why? Because we're not really for each other, we're just against something else. And so that's especially important when you need to go fight a battle in life. This is where you can rally the troops. And you can get a lot of people to go against something specific, but that doesn't mean they're for you. And matter of fact, something to also to understand about comrades, just because they're for what you're against now, doesn't mean they won't shoot you tomorrow. Because tomorrow, when what you're against isn't there, now they're against you. So again, comrades, you need to be aware that these people are for what you're against. And again, they're also need to be valued. It's not that you say, well, they're completely invaluable. This was especially used in World War II. It wasn't that they were for us. They were just for what we were against. And so when you understand that, and that's why right after that, we can fight with each other. Why? Because we weren't constituents, and we weren't confidants. We were comrades. Because really, they were only for what we were against. And the last one is companion. Companions is, again, kind of that significant other. And again, this is what kind of makes it interesting, is they're not always for what you're for. How many people are married? How many times is your wife always for what you're for? And the answer is, sometimes never. But that doesn't mean she's against what you're against either. And it doesn't mean that she's only for you or for what you're for. And so again, but they can be every one of these. They can be a confidant that are 100% for your success. They can be the constituent where they're for what you're for. And they can also be the comrade and they're for what you're against. Or they can just be against you. Because see, again, each one of these, they can be. And when you understand that, when you're in a scenario where you two are working in a situation where you are going against something, there's a great power together. Because it's two of you headed against something. That's how you can take relationships that, you know, they get together and they just have problem after problem after problem for 30 years. And then the kids move out and they go, I hate you. And then they get divorced. It's the best time of their entire life. Why? They were comrades. They were only together for what they were against. And see, when we start understanding some of this, we can identify some of these personality traits and then even address them in sometimes years in advance. And so by being able to address it years in advance, you can sit there and know that, hey, we're having a problem connecting, but we fight great together. So we're great at fighting things together and attacking the world, but we're not really constituents or comrades, or I'm sorry, confidants. And so that's where you can work on the confidant and constituent side so that you have a deeper relationship, because you realize that you're really only together when you're against something. And so, or sometimes is they're only with you when it's for what they want. And so again, you can start identifying these, because really, in a relationship, a companion should be all three of them. Okay, and so that also helps your relationship side. That also helps your relationship side with people that you're dealing with. Because if you're headed to publish a particular event or do things, you're going to need people that are really your constituents. They're really only for what you're for. They're not really for you. They're for what you're for. And so if you're for feeding the hungry, they're for it. If you're against poverty, they're with you because you're against poverty. But that doesn't mean they're for you. And so these people will always come along, even in your business strategies.
It's interesting, Sean, hearing you talk about these different things. And I know this isn't in your notes, so I'm just going to say one key word that came to my mind in these different relationships was a promoter. Because there are people who you're talking about being for you or for what you're for. But there are people naturally gifted that, you know, whether it's politics, business, church, or sports, I mean, there's just always people who will just promote either the individual or promote the cause. But what I was really thinking about here was, you know, for people who maybe follow with like the secret and the law of attraction and things like that, and even in the Bible, basically, you really want to be discussing and promoting, if you will, what you are for, as opposed to going against what you're against. Because if you're speaking against, you're actually adding energy and attention to the negative and what you don't want. You really want to be focusing on what you do want, what you like, what you want to speak highly about.
And that is one of the sides where, in most cases, you're right. I mean, if you're a promoter and you're trying to do something, you don't need 600 enemies. But in a lot of cases where, you know, you're trying to address or deal with real problems or those kind of things, sometimes, you know, for example, if you're in other countries where they have a lot of bribery and corruption and stealing and murders and those kind of things, a lot of people are more comrades than they are there for things, because really they're needing people to come alongside to be against something. And so when they come alongside to be against something, they start realizing the differences to try to go against and to address the problems. And so really, just by understanding each one of the different levels, it'll help you acknowledge kind of some of the differences or what's happening in your life. And two, like prime example, if someone is your promoter, what happens lots of times? Man, I thought you really had my back. No, he was just for what you were for. He wasn't for you. He was for what you were for. And so we get mad because, again, and Charles just said, depending on the type of promoter. And so now if the promoter's for you, it doesn't really matter what you're doing because he's for you. And so when you understand that, you can use these types of people in the way that they are supposed to be used by, and not being confused by their types, and also understanding who these different people are coming, so that you're not thrown aback and changed and affected and don't understand what's going on in your own personal life.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Now, I've always said the majority, I'm willing to bet 90%, maybe more, of people's conflicts come from communication problems, challenges, or varying expectations. You know, one person expects something from another, and another person expects something from that person, and they don't match up. So how I'm going to put you on the spot is, have you found in your personal life, your professional life, anything in between? We always talk about prefacing, you know, the conversation you're going to have, or as you're talking to the group here, understanding where that other person's coming from, and putting the hat on your side, on your own hat, saying, "What am I? How am I relating to that person?" Is there ways you found, whether you ask questions or make a statement or clarify if it's not clear, so people know I'm coming at this relationship with you as a comrade or a confidant or what have you, or vice versa, asking that person, say, just to be clear, so I don't have any false expectations where I get punked out 2 months from now because you don't have my back. What's our relationship? What's your relationship with me? And this is what mine is with you.
The next subject, which we were going to get into, is what are the three different things you need to do? You need to communicate. You need to clarify. And then you need to ask the right questions. And then you need to communicate. Then you need to clarify. Then you need to ask the right questions. Then you need to communicate. Then you need to clarify. Then you need to... See, this is the process of making a correct vision. So what happens, and again, to talk about what you just said, the number one problem in relationships, and one of my psychiatrists just said this not too long ago to me, is it's not how we get there, but how we communicate while we're headed there, which drives me nuts because I'm an absolute end-of-the-line numbers guy. I want to know what the number is.
We're on a key point here, Sean. I would like, if you would mind, restating that one more time for the notes. That is so powerful for people to understand because it's not what you hear every day. You need to understand that exactly what you just said.
Psychiatrists say, specifically like in marriage counseling, it is not about the issue. It is about the process at arriving to the issue. But again, for my personality, I only care about the issue. I don't care how we get there. I don't care if we like each other. I don't care. See, but what has happened is I can be very caustic in the relationship and I end up being a comrade because I'm only against the problem and I'm not for you instead of being a constituent, which is for you or for what you're for. And so now I'm fighting you for what you're after.
And I think it's important, too, for people to realize, and I know Sean personally, we have a great friendship and probably know each other better than either one of us would admit. And we've seen each other go through a bunch of junk and good and bad, good stuff, too. But the truth of the matter here is unless you're a hermit, living under a rock on a deserted island, we are in this world with other people, and we are all wired as emotional beings. And then over time, those emotions can become protected with barriers or calluses, or and some people have no barrier, no filters. But the bottom line is, what Sean's getting to, I think this is so key, is how you communicate is as equally important as what you're communicating. You could say exactly the right thing, perfectly the right thing, the most wisdom in the world, and deliver it in a way that people can't receive it. So I think that's key, and Sean has come to this revelation as well. We're going to learn exactly how we can do that, communicating, clarifying, and asking the right questions.
The more you do that process, the more you communicate, the more you clarify, the more you ask the right questions. And especially with someone, and see, a lot of people will not get to a point where they'll be honest. And we're going to get into part of that in the influence side a lot more. But one of the key breakdowns to communication, and again, I will talk to about this in kind of more detail, but are you a liar? And see, that's kind of one of them shock. What do you mean? Am I a liar? So if I say, hey, did that bother you? No, that didn't bother me. You just lied. See, and so what happens is now there's a breakdown in communication. Now, I could say, yeah, that really aggravated me. Well, now I'm being honest. Now, clarification can happen. But see, if your boss comes to you and they ask you a question, and you just tell them what they want to hear, then what happens is they never need any clarification. So they never ask any additional questions. So there's a complete failure in communication. Why? Because they're only telling them what they want to hear anyway. So if you're not, as a boss, as a leader, willing to 100% hear something completely opposite of what you believe with an unbiased opinion, you know, one of the things that I've heard, well, I've got X amount of experience. I've been doing this for X amount of time. So you know it all then. The second you start bringing up how long you've done something, you already have a biased opinion. So what you're saying is, I don't need more clarification. So all communication is done at that one central point because you just said you already know it. And I dealt with this specifically with a lot of realtors when I first got started, because I was 23 years old and I'm a real estate appraiser. And these guys are looking at me going, dude, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. And they had been. And the problem was they were still breaking all the value rules. And so, but the first thing they would start telling me is how long they've been doing it. What's that have to do with this house? What's this have to do with the comp selection? What's this have to do with the fact of that it's in a horrible area where all the values are through the floor? Nobody wants to buy in that particular market, and there's 6,000 houses that prove it. How long you've been doing it got to do with any of that? See, the question's not relevant. It's all about demonstrating the biased opinion. Went to do one guy's house one time, and so we show up to the house, and we're doing the inspection, and he's like, well, I've been, I'm such doctor. So? Well, I'm a blank, blank neurologist, blah, blah, blah. So? What's that have to do with this house? And so, that's where one of the, again, the breakdowns in communication is why? Because you think that age or experience is proof that you know more. And so this is actually where a lot of communication is broke down, because one, the side of it, again, on the lion side, is are you willing to be honest? You know, something I'm learning to do is somebody can say, well, can you understand how that made me feel? Yeah, I do. And you can understand why that bothered me. Yeah. And you can understand my perspective. Yeah. So you agree? No. So I can understand. I've communicated. But you want to make somebody mad? Just start saying, yeah, I understand. You understand. You understand. Yeah, yeah. Go down the list of the 30 things that you understand about their particular situation. And then they get down to the end. So you agree with what I did? No. Absolutely not. But I understand. And so again, and this is something I do with appraisals all the time. I go to a house, and they tell me, well, I just love this type of flooring. And I took all my brand new hardwoods out and I put in this brand new ceramic tile hardwoods because I just love this. I said, okay, great. And then the appraisal comes in $20,000 short because really, it, you know, they're counting the amount of ceramic tile that replaced their brand new hardwood. And they're like, well, why is it $20,000 short? I said, well, the ceramic tile and the hardwood of our equal marketable value. I said, so therefore you replaced something that was of same value. And so therefore it didn't actually contribute any additional value to the appraisal. And so, that being said, when you understand that, that gives you, again, more opportunity to ask and communicate and to just kind of change some of the different sides of it to get to where you see what point of view that they're coming from, what expectation, what they're wanting, and you can be that open and honest person, which gives people opportunity to ask questions. But the second you say, nope, nothing's wrong, everything's perfectly fine, oh yes, I agree. Whenever you do that, now if you agree, but have a reason why you agree, so that, again, it can have a clarification. Because, see, I can say I agree with you, but in my explanation, that might not be what you thought it was going to be. And so because now I've clarified the communication, you realize, well, yeah, but I wasn't really expecting it on that side. I was really talking about this. Ah, see, now because they asked a question, there's more clarification. And so now it narrows the funnel, and the more pointed the funnel gets, the sharper the analysis. And so the sharper the analysis, the more central point it becomes. Like, for example, they use water to cut jeans. It's a very effective thing to cut fabric. The reason why is because it doesn't tear the fabric. And they run it through high focused pressure. So they take all this water and they run it to a single point that's focused to cut the fabric. But it's just water. See, the same water with no pressure just causes the fabric to be wet. But with the correct amount of focus, it'll cut it. And so this is so important with asking right questions and clarifying, because the more pointed the questions actually get, you start really focusing or really learning where you're at. And so the more you can learn where you're at and where others are at, the more beneficial you can actually find out they are or where they are to be more beneficial to them.
A lot of reasons that people don't ask the questions. Laziness. Maybe they don't value the relationship enough to take the extra effort to really dig into it. Some people are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. As someone once told me recently, said, well, and I think I've heard you say this before too, but this was someone else saying, don't just ask me how am I doing if you're not prepared for the response.
Yep.
And most people say just fine because they don't really want to go there. But the truth of the matter is, and you know, if you want meaningful relationships and the person who's asking the question really, really cares, you know, don't just ask if what you want is I'm just fine. Ask because you really care, because you really want to find out. You value that relationship. You value that other person. You may not know them very well if you're trying to get to know them. But that's, I think, as human beings, I think that's what we got to do a better job at, is being real and being and communicating openly, even if it takes a few extra minutes or it's uncomfortable.
That kind of made me laugh, is I'm fine. And the reason why is one of the acronyms that we used to use is freaking insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Is I'm fine. And people use that all the time, and it's kind of a little joke, but how much of the time is that an accurate statement? I'm fine. I'm insecure, I'm neurotic, and emotional. And so when you understand that, and understand that progression with the personality type. Again, a lot of people don't value the relationship. A lot of people don't want to hear your opinion. And see, that kind of goes back up to some of the previous comment that we were talking about. If you identify who they are they even for you? They're not. They're a confidant. they're only for what you're for. You know, you go, and a lot of different public settings can be this way, but you show up to a particular event and it's, oh, hey, and you go every week and you say hi and all these kind of things. And, but they're only for you on that day. They only talk to you that day. You don't see them the rest of the week. Why? They weren't for you. If you don't ever hear from them besides when you show up there, they're not for you. And that's rough. It sounds, you know, well, I thought they really cared. Well, if they never see you anywhere else and you never talk to them, they're not for you. And that can be quite sobering. And the other side of it is, are they a father, brother, son? And then, did you bother to ask the right questions? Are they a student, teacher, mentor, talker? Are they just talking? Or is it your place to say anything? Did they ask you? Are they going to receive anything you got to say anyway? Is it beneficial, uplifting, or necessary? And again, when you start understanding this, you know, are they a giver, a receiver, exchanger, or a thief? What are they? See, when you start understanding these different sides of it, your communication, your clarification, and what questions you're asking are going to completely change. If you know they're a thief, I wonder if you're going to communicate and clarify differently. In other words, hey, yeah, you're welcome to come to my house, but you're not going to touch anything. Why? Because they're a thief, and you know they are. Or, dude, I'm going to frisk you before you walk out the door. I'm sorry, you're a thief. Okay? And you do that in certain situations. For example, you take kids that have been in foster homes and they've done that kind of stuff. The parents will say, hey, before you leave the house, come here. Why? Because it's a habit. They steal on habit. Not even, you know, what are they called, a kleptomaniac? Why? Are they even trying? No. They built such a habit of stealing that it's part of their everyday life. And the part that's sad is people do this to each other on a daily basis. They're literally kleptomaniacs of people's time on a daily basis. They'll call you, they want to talk for 2 hours about nothing every day. And then the day you don't talk to them, they're mad at you. Why? They're kleptos. And see, when you understand that, you can start identifying your relationships, your personality types, those kind of things. And one of the big things, really, is clarification, which is also part of setting boundaries. See, clarification and boundaries are almost synonymous with each other. If you don't set any boundaries in the relationship on either side, then almost always there's miscommunication, misinterpretation, and so therefore there's a loss in expectation, and so there's a loss in influence. And so this is, again, due to not asking the right questions. One of my best friends, the first time I really kind of met him, and this is kind of a funny story, we were working at church. I was involved in multiple different projects at the time, and so basically I'm running from one side to another trying to get some stuff done. And this guy comes up in my space, and he's just staring at me. And I'm like, I just looked at him, and he's just watching me do stuff. I'm like, do you need something? He's like, no. I said, then get out of my way. You're in my way. And he's like, okay. So he gets out of my way, and I finish what I was doing. And so I get done, and the next week I see him, and he comes up and he says, hey. I'm like, yeah. He says, you're not as busy today. He says, you got a minute to talk? I says, yeah. He said, well, I would like to get to know you. Well, I had just went through a really kind of a misinterpretation of some relationships. I thought he was a constituent or a confidant. Actually, more of a confidant. I really thought he was that and a brother, but he was more of a mentor, and so he really acted more like a father, and so therefore there was a break in communication, and I got my feelings hurt. So when Dave come around, I didn't really want to have a relationship with anybody in any form. And I had just went through a divorce, and so I got no wife. At the time, my son didn't even want to talk to me. And so I'm dealing with that too. And so that lasted for about a year due to, again, some misinterpretation on his side. He thought that I didn't love him because we were getting divorced, but it was because me and her couldn't deal with each other. And due to a lot of previous background where I made a lot of wrong decisions when I was younger. And so because of that and because of the breakdown, and again, just communication, we had problems. Well, finally with Dave, I said, he said, man, I'd love to have lunch with you. I said, with me. Because I realized I'm bitter, not better. And so I says, okay, fine. I'll buy. You want to go to lunch? I'll buy you lunch. He said, okay. He said, where? I said, Applebee's. We'll go to Applebee's. So we went to Applebee's. We sat down. We had a nice lunch. Well, just like any conversation, you sit down. The first 20 minutes, almost always in basic conversation, is fluff. It has no real purpose. It's all about what's your name, where are you from, what do you do, how'd you get here, why are you here, what are you doing now, and really, that's all fine. But finally, after about 20 minutes of conversation, I looked across the table. I said, man, I only got one question. What do you want? So again, what am I doing? I'm clarifying. Now, I will honestly say that's not the right fashion to do it. I did it completely wrong. But this is what his response was. He says, dude, I just need somebody to talk to, and I just need a friend. I said, dude, I can do that. He didn't ask for him to be my friend. He asked me for me to be his friend. See, that was clarification. Now, since then, he is my friend. Okay? But I never had an expectation he was going to be my friend. I was just going to be a friend to him because we clarified that on the front end. Why? Because I asked a question. It was a specific question. Now, again, I've learned how to soften some of the things. Again, I have learned getting there is as important as what we actually do when we get there. And so I've learned to correct a lot of those demeanors and attitudes and phrases. But again, you got to ask the right questions.
One thing, too, I think this is so humorous. I've heard some of these stories before, and I just laugh. I've heard it from both people. But, you know, if I'm sitting here listening for a minute, I might be thinking, wow, this guy, he's been divorced. He's been bankrupt. He's been all these things. And, of course, those were many years ago. And personally, I've been through those issues as well at different times. And the point of this is, guys, these are the principles. They'll work in any situation. They'll work in any background, any male, female, color, whatever. Most people who are successful go through a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. So I want everybody to realize that this is a person who's been through the minefield paving that way for you. So maybe you've already been through some of this garbage. Maybe you're in the middle of it now. Or maybe you're fortunate enough to get this and are able to avoid it because you can learn from Sean. So that's just something I wanted to throw out there for everybody. You know, just because somebody has been through some tough spots, again, myself included, I know a lot of people, they had to fail before they were able to succeed and of course, get back on the positive side of things. That's why it's taken so long to get this product out from when you first started talking about it.
Yeah, since I started actually talking about it till now is right at 8 years. Since I started talking about it till I'm talking about it was 8 years. So I knew the thing, but again, like I had reiterated in one of the previous CDs, is I didn't prove this had worked. See, I started learning the principles 10 years ago. But 10 years ago, I was already going bankrupt. I was already losing everything. I was already getting a divorce. And I'm trying to figure out how to breathe, how to get out of the ditch I've been digging for 10, 20, 30 years. I'm trying to get out of the ditch that I've been digging. Now, on Facebook, I saw a post not too long ago, and they had two pictures, and it had this nice little straight line with a slight curve in it. And it says, this is the perception that most people have of success. It's this just nice, even, straight line, coast, you know, follow the yellow brick road, there's no problems. And then it had a picture right beside it, and it had this big crater with a bunch of spikes in the bottom, and then it had this guy building a bridge to go over a cliff, and then it had him teleport, or not teleport, but parachuting up over off of one cliff onto another one, and it said, this is how real success happens. And so what tends to happen is when we go through these things, we call them rock bottom moments. Matter of fact, this whole seminar is based from me from a thing of rock bottom moments. Because, see, when you hit bottom, you have to have something solid to stand on. And see, this to me is why the original series was called The First Principle of Success. Was because to me, I realized until I get this right, I can't really go to the next level. And so that was always a big thing, was I hadn't found my foundation stuff yet. And so until you get that foundation stuff really underneath you, you can't crawl out of a hole. Why? Because you're still digging.
Sean, it's funny. I know you've interviewed and talked with many successful people, worked with them in your business. That's what I used to do many years ago, was interview basically millionaires and multimillionaires, and at one point had about five or six of them that I actually invested money to learn from. But through the books and the seminars and the interviews and the relationships, the funny thing is, and I'm not saying categorically, you know, you have to go through a divorce or you have to go through a bankruptcy to be successful. That's not at all what I'm saying. In fact, I know a lot of people who are successful who have not experienced either of those. But my point is, many have been through those things. And it's that rock bottom moment you're talking about. And does that mean you may have some self-correcting you need to work on? Absolutely, we all do. But sometimes it's a matter of, now that I've been through, quote-unquote, the worst thing that could happen to me, I'm no longer afraid of dusting myself up and trying again. You know, because either that failure will put you in a mode where you're either afraid to try it again because you don't want to get hurt again, or you say, I don't care. If that's the worst that could happen to me, I'll try again, because ultimately, if I keep getting up and keep trying, I will succeed and it'll all be worth it.
That's why I made that comment about first things first, about the weighted analysis, putting a number to it, is because, see, what I realized is I kept doing a lot of things, acting like it was successful, while I really just kept failing. And see, when you put a number to it, you can prove how much success you've had at it. And so, for example, I've had a lot of success with both my boys. And so, they both did straight A's and honor roll and dual enrollment and, you know, and AP college courses and all this other stuff. So I've got some basis off of my decisions. Why? When I can look back at some of my success rate with my children, I got proof it's working. Now, it's working for my children. Does that mean it's going to work for yours? No, because your children are different. But see, again, by me assigning a number to it, in a sense, I can prove it's working. But you got a bunch of people that are saying, oh yeah, it's working, it's working, show me one success. Well, I can't. It's not working. That's stupidity. Doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. And so, again, this is part of the whole thing, is are you really willing to go back to what's your numbers? What's your success rate? You know, you got a lot of people out there that go jump into business endeavors, and they've never been successful at anything before. I don't have a problem with you jumping into stuff, but start with something that you think you can have success at. And one thing I learned to do is find something I can have success at and do it. And then after I do it, I find something else and I do it. And then I do some stuff. So I build a reputation of success, not a reputation of failure. See, because if you build a reputation of failure, your mindset is wrong, and so all you're doing is failing, and you don't even know what was working or not. But if you can learn how to make the littlest thing successful on a consistent basis, it doesn't really matter how big it gets, because really, a big thing always starts small anyway. My dad always said, don't despise the small thing.
Also, the great thing about this, now, if you are saying, hey, Sean, I have not had that first success yet. I've got a lot of those failures. So the other important thing, one of the reasons I applaud anybody who's actually plugging into the training right now, pat yourself on the back. You've already made the first step, because you sometimes for that initial success, you've got to leverage somebody else who's had success to make that first step, as we might call, whether it's influencing or building a team, or you know, learn how to make $100 before you make $1,000 kind of thing. But you partner up with somebody, you know, just like Dave did with you. He knew he needed somebody. He knew he needed a friend. I mean, it doesn't have to all be business, you know. But the thing is, everybody has to start somewhere. And one of the things I've always said, everything always had its first day, its first moment. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't matter if you're starting back from zero or crawling out of a hole, out of a pit. Find somebody who is willing to help you get from point A to point B. You may not go all the way the journey with that person, but they can get you to the, say, example, the money example. Find somebody to help you make $100 extra, and then find the next person to help you make $200 extra, and so on.
Not all people are going to help you get all the way to the next level. But that would be valuing them for what level they are at that moment. Are they the confidant, constituent, comrade? Are they a father, brother, son, a companion, a significant other? Are they a student, a teacher, a mentor, a talker? It doesn't really matter. It's not about having a particular criteria, it's about valuing each individual one. Because that's really what the whole problem is. A lot of people say, well, I'm not ever going to deal with people that don't have my back. Well, that's stupid. You know, if you're going to war with somebody, you better have some people that are for what you're against, even if they ain't got your back, because you're going to need some help. And so, again, it's not that, you know, and I see people do this all the time. Well, I don't like how they're running stuff over there. So? Or I don't agree with how they're doing it. And a friend of mine I was talking to, and he was a Baptist minister that I know. And he says, you know, he says, I know some of you are Lutheran, some are Methodist, some are even evangelical, some are Catholic, some are Pentecostal, some are non-denominational, some are, he said, and all of you are coming, he said, to help these teens, he said, at detention centers and stuff like that, he said, because really we all have the exact same goal. We love Christ and we love these kids. See, again, what's the real central point? And see, what happens is people go, now see, there was some communication there. There was some clarification, and there was some asking questions. He pointed out that, number one, what's our central focus? Do we have a central focus? What is it? To love Christ and love kids. And so we had that central point. So you're going to have different situations in business where really that you are focusing on a particular task. And it's really the same thing, even like we brought up earlier with a promoter. You're going to have a promoter. They're for promoting you. They're not necessarily for you. It just means that they're for promoting you. Now, me and Charles, we've known each other for over, I think over 10 years now, 8 to 10 years. And Charles is 100% for me just because he's for me. Now, I came under him, and so I've had a lot of success on different sides because of things he taught me even years ago. But this is something that I learned to do separately. And so, therefore, because I valued him, I valued his friendship. But he switched in these roles at different points, too. He's always been there, always been for me. But sometimes it's been at different levels and different involvement and different things like that. That doesn't make any of it bad. It just lets you know that not everybody fits the parameter that you fit. And if you're going to be biased and judgmental and point fingers at people and all those type of things and say, well, they're this and they're that, then what you're going to do is you're going to eliminate a lot of help in your life because you're just judgmental and hypocritical. And so this is very important, guys, to realize. And but, you know, yeah, sure, you do need to communicate. You do need some clarification. You need to ask some questions. And not just ask questions, but sometimes ask the right questions. Now, like, for example, we'll use this seminar. Okay, I can do it in three different ways. I can do it as a motivational speech. I can say, you know, how fantastic it is about valuing and loving people to give an encouragement and how they can change your life and just love on people and that you're going to be successful and that everything that you do, you're going to have success at and that you're going to strive and excel as long as you put your mind to it. That's motivation. It excites you. It lets you know you can make it to the next level. You have the ability to make it. That you are not limited by your circumstances or your situations. That you have everything you need to be successful. That is motivation. But the question is, do you need that? Is it just motivation, or maybe you need a seminar where we come in and we teach some of these principles. And we come in a different fashion, in a different setup, and we show you in several different ways how to actually do some of these things. But then there's a workshop. Workshops are designed for a thorough, in-depth workshop. You sit there and you actually put some of this into practice. You demonstrate it. You actually work your way through it. That's what the purpose of a workshop is. But see, lots of times people will want you to do something for them, but they'll never ask you, hey, what's the most beneficial? Lots of times they'll only ask you, how much does it cost? And how much it costs is not always the best question. So, for example, if I'm going to go buy a tool, and I'm only looking at the cost, well, I could make a mistake. Such as, well, how much does the drill cost? Well, the drill costs $100. The next question should be, well, how long does it last? They say 6 months. I say, okay. Has it got good reviews? No, it has horrible reviews. So that's asking the right question. But then I say, well, how about this drill? Well, it's $125. Oh, well, that's too much money. No, the next question is, well, how long does it last? Oh, it lasts 5 years plus. Well, is the $25 the issue? No. Why? Because the item has the value. I think Warren Buffett made the phrase, and I might be repetitious by saying this, but it's not the price of the thing that matters as much as the value it brings. So, for example, is a $100,000 house expensive? Depends on who you are. But what if I said, hey, there's a house for sale and it's $1 million? And what would most people say automatically is, that's too expensive. Are you sure? Because what if I told you it's $1 million house for sale that's worth $10 million? But the $100,000 house was only worth $120,000. Was the $1 million house too expensive? And the answer is no. Because, see, you could go get a loan on a $1 million house if it's worth $10 million, any bank would do it because the percentage is so low. And so, again, Warren Buffett made the comment that cost is only a consideration in the absence of value. And so, when you understand that, you'll ask different questions. So, as an appraiser, there's three basic appraisals I generally do, which is a REO, which is like a liquidation value appraisal, an exterior only, and an interior. Well, a REO, I can do it as is or subject to. An exterior, I only drive by the outside of the house, and so the information that's available on the inside is very limited and lots of times inaccurate. And then the interior is based off an actual inspection, but it's only based off of a 90 to, well, current stipulations is 90 to 120 day market value, if that's the specific market parameters. And so, at the time of this recording, and so when I say that. So, we have three different parameters or values I can do. I can do 90-day quick sell value. I can do listing price. I can do it as repaired. I can do it with additions. The question is, I'll go do them, and they're like, well, I was getting this appraisal done, but we're doing all these renovations. Can you count them? No, because the lender ordered it only as is condition. So when you go buy a car, if you go buy the car and you buy it new, how much is it worth when I drive it off the lot? See, that's the next fun question. Then you know what your separation in value is. Or if you say, okay, well, I'm going to go put in this $2,000 speaker system, how much is my car worth now? If you're getting into a particular relationship, if I marry you, is there any change in assets? Is there some questions? If I marry you, is all your junk going to come out after it? And again, I mean, not to make this sound necessarily only comical, but what happens most of the time, there's no questions. Nobody's asking anybody anything. And so they're not trying to figure out what they could do or should do. They're not inquiring anything. They're not changing their setup. They make that comment that, oh, I've been doing this for 30 years, and this is how I think it should be. Based off of what? And so again, when dealing with any bit of this, guys, realize, man, the different types of people in your life, just by understanding it, will cut out the miscommunications. You'll understand how to keep mentors in your life. You'll really understand, you know, who are the people that are really for you, the givers, the receivers, the, you know, the ones that are exchanging, those kind of things. And each one of them will help you locate each individual person or those different people in your life. And by locating those people, you can know who's for you and who's against you in some aspects. And so there's not a breakdown in communication. There's not a breakdown on what your goals and aspirations are, that you're not affected by the emotional effect of a breakdown of a relationship because you're not necessarily caught off guard. And so, and one of the comments I heard one time is your betrayer is always somebody you chose. And so whoever betrays you, remember you chose them. And so the question is if you could choose people differently, who would betray you now? Because see, you would know lots of times on the front end who they were. It doesn't mean that they still won't be there. It just means that lots of times you'll see it coming and it won't necessarily catch you off guard. And so you can limit your damages. And Warren Buffett made the phrase, he says, rule number one, never lose money. Rule number two, refer to rule number one. He said, so make your wins go long and cut your losses short. That was a particular phrase by Warren Buffett. And so even like in relationships, sometimes you just have to cut your losses short. You realize, hey, they're not good. They're not good people. They're mean, they're hateful, etc. But if they're winners, then that's where you jump in and you be a real friend and a confidant. You stick with them for good, bad, and ugly forever because they're the right kind of people. And so when you understand this about people, it'll allow you to make better decisions. It'll allow you to know who you're hiring, what type of relationship you should be having even at work, how to modify some of that relationship while you're at work to make sure that you're keeping the relationship on a proper level, that there's not miscommunication, that you're keeping the perspectives in the right point of view so that they're not having a lack of interpretation in the relationship. And so that really allows you to again, keep that influence up there, to keep your knowledge about people a lot more up there. And so by kind of understanding some of that different sides, you can really keep your personal return on investment much higher. And so you can keep also those teachers and those mentors in your life because they'll see that you're a giver, that you're not necessarily an exchanger. And if you are an exchanger, that you let them know on the front end. And so there's not a lack of communication and a breakdown of communication. And see, and that allows you to have that, again, that return on investment and that personal influence much higher because there's not that breakdown in communication because you're asking the right questions, and that'll give you so much more success in your relationships and just more success with people. And it'll also help your personal well-being, your personal emotions. And that's what's so vitally important about it, is because I got so tired of being so frustrated with people. And so I started trying to learn different ways people responded and those type of things. And by learning this, I realized I didn't get as frustrated about people because I would see how they were and I would see how I connected with them and their value on an individual basis.
Yep.
And so that was just so, so very important to me.
One thing I was going to say, Sean, too, is what you're hearing, I think, in what Sean's explaining, remember, the other person is also on this journey. Well, I'll tell you what, I wish everybody had this information and could go through it. So you may be further along now as you are understanding some of these principles and as you're understanding how to relate, how to put that expectation out up front and understanding the parties in the relationship. So I think that's the other thing that's a high level of maturity is always understanding that other person is also not perfect, just like you're not perfect. That other person has their own hang-ups and their own issues. So you're going to have to be the bigger man or the bigger woman, so forth, to take the high road, relate with them, but you're going to be the one coaching and guiding that relationship because of your better understanding now. And then perhaps, you know, you can even educate them on the laws of value that you're learning.
The last thing to kind of reiterate with that is when you understand core values or gravitational center, which we'll get into a little bit on your actual influence side, we'll touch on that a little bit. But when you realize the values that they have and the values that you have, and then you can understand what their relational style is that we just talked about and how they're kind of hitting with you or not hitting with you, then you can understand, okay, well, you know, based off of their intricacies or their differences or their problems or whatever you want to call it, this is how I can work with them. And so, again, it's finding that core value that you can still have a relationship or have some form of a relationship so you can still value them. And this is what a lot of this is about. It's not about saying, well, you know, I found out that they're a thief and I found out that they're a comrade and I found out that they're this and really that they're just bad people and I don't want anything to do with them. That's not necessarily accurate. Now, you may limit your direct contact to make sure that you're not putting, you know, certain things on a wrong side. And I use this analogy one time actually talking to Charles, is I may let you in my house and give you some money because you need some money. And if I give you $100, that doesn't mean that I have a problem with giving you $100 because I gave it to you. But I'm not going to allow you to come in my house and start taking $100 bills out of my pocket without me limiting how much, again, direct exposure I have to you, because you'll steal everything I have, because the comment I made is givers have to set limits because takers don't have any. And so you have to make sure that you limit certain types of relationship, because they'll steal your joy, they'll steal your influence, they'll steal your relationships, it'll just affect you on a very negative level. But again, that doesn't mean that you still don't need to love on some people and hang out with them, because you might be the only good that they ever see. And so you have to make sure that you're still valuing the people, but you may have to value them on a more limited scale. And so when you understand that, it can really, really help you out and really increase your relationships with people and increase the benefit of the relationship with people. And so we're going to go ahead and wrap this up today on the people side of it. Again, visit us on the Art of Value and Value to Victory. And remember too, guys, we'll be doing online coaching, so we'll speak to you soon. Have a blessed day.